Last concept I believe we spoke about was the when you do a mitzvah, not just are you doing it to attach yourself and to bring energy to yourself, but you're also doing the mitzvah and also studying the Torah in order to connect your neshama, your soul, with the soul and the neshamas of all of every single Jew in the entire world. And we explain that our neshamas come from what's called the level of Malchus of Atzilus. The four stages is Atzilus and then Bria, Yetzirah, Asiya, the four stages, the four worlds. Each of those worlds have 10 levels. In general, the source of the Jewish neshamas is Malchus d'Atzilus, the 10th level of the first and the highest world. And from there, it gets parceled out. Each neshama becomes a little spark of energy that gives life to a body. And even though we all come, however, from that 10th level of the first and highest world, not every individual is able to feel that. And we explained that only the greatest of tzaddikim can feel that. Ordinary people can only feel how the energy passes through yet the lower levels. So again, this is based on the general understanding of how Hashem gives energy to the world, and the energy descends from the top down. And our job is to increase that energy flow. Our job is to make the energy that flows through and comes to us yet more powerful, in quantity and in quality. When we do mitzvahs, and when we do the mitzvahs with a certain intentions, this is what we explained in the last few chapters, the intentions themselves become the fuel, the rocket fuel. They become, in the language of the Zohar, the wings that allows the mitzvah to soar upwards and to soar upwards to the right spot, which will then open up gates, doors, and pipelines of energy coming down to us and to the world. So it's a flow of energy that flows down from Hashem initially, and then our job is to increase that energy. So it's like a person who gives money to somebody else in order to do business. So I'm giving you a certain amount of money to do business, but the point of me giving you the money is not that you should stay with that amount of money, but you should use the money and create something. Or in the simple terms, a person buys stock in a company. I'm giving my money to the company, not because I want the company to have my money, but because I want the company to use my money to increase the value of the company, so I'll get yet more. That's why it's called investing. Hashem invests in us, and Hashem invests in the world. And Hashem says to us, I am going to give you a certain amount of energy, and I'm going to set up a structure. And that's the four worlds and the 10 levels in each of the four worlds and multiple levels inside each of those levels. I'm going to set up a structure by which, if you do certain things, I will be able to increase that energy flow. And you will, in essence, make a profit, so to speak, off of the initial energy that I'm giving you. So it's a two-way flow. In other words, Hashem gives us energy in order to start the process. Hashem makes his initial investment, gives us a neshama, creates a world, but he only puts a certain amount into the way an ordinary person or company invests. And then it's up to us. We are the workers, we are the worker bees, we are the actual people in the factory, we're the people on the ground, and it's up to us to do mitzvahs and to study Torah. And by doing that, that's how we increase the energy quantity in the world. One of the important things to recognize, and this is true even in the physical world, is that when you do something on your own, it's not as powerful as if you do it with a group. And today we have this concept of social influencers and social media. What is social influence? Social media, it means that the more people you can get together to look at your platform, whatever it is, whether it's YouTube or Instagram or whatever your platform is, the more people will look at it, the more people will click on it, the more people will be involved with you, the more valuable your brand becomes. And the Jewish people is the same. Well, I don't want to say the same. We're not social influencers, although we have come to think of it, we actually are social influencers. We're supposed to influence the entire world to be a certain way, in a good way. So therefore, when we get together and we do a mitzvah and we feel to ourselves that that mitzvah that we're doing is not just for ourselves, that mitzvah is actually something that increases the general pool of energy that is brought down into the entirety of creation, that's very powerful. That intention itself, as we explained earlier, it's not just the action of doing the mitzvah that causes stuff to happen. It's the intention that is, in certain instances, almost as powerful as the action itself. And if not almost as powerful, it definitely makes the action have its intended effect. And we get all these analogies from showing up at your friend's party and giving a gift, and but you have a sour face, and the whole point, you just spent money and you went shopping and you schlepped the gift and this and that. The whole point is lost, because when you presented the gift, you presented it with a sour face, and the person feels like you don't want to be there, you don't want to give the gift, and you gave the gift, and as a matter of fact, you lost. You didn't get it. So this is the concept of intention and how the intention is so important. And now we're talking about this intention, the observance of the commandments, to unite, in the language of Zohar, to unite Kutcha, Brichu, and Shkinte. This means to unite the energy that is bringing down, that is preceding the source of our neshamas, of our souls, to unite that with the neshamas himself. The Rebbe notes that much more than the union of divine souls and God is accomplished by the study of Torah, the performance of mitzvahs. These activities bring about hamtakas hadinim. In addition to the fact that we are creating yet more powerful energy flow by uniting with each other, we are also tempering the harsh judgments, tempering the givuros. What this means is that in the process of Hashem giving energy to the world, there are entities, there are levels that are judging, that are stopping, that are saying maybe we don't deserve. When we do certain things and we show ourselves to be worthy, those points that Hashem set up and Hashem created in order to make us worthy of receiving the energy, those are sweetened, and that means those are muted. They don't stop, they don't block the energy flow anymore. So let's move on. And as we said many times, the language of Kabbalah and the language of the Zohar is poetic language. So if I'm talking about social influencers, I'm not talking about social influencers, we're talking about mitzvahs. The Zohar uses other terminologies that were available in those times, meaning in times of Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai, which is 2,000 years ago. So they didn't have the language. If the Zohar would have been written today, the Zohar would have used the language of today, meaning all of the different analogies that we have with electricity flowing and with computers and with kinds of other stuff. But the Zohar doesn't use this language. And the Zohar is also based on the language that is used earlier than the Zohar, in the language of David HaMelech, King David, the language of Shlomo HaMelech, King Solomon, his son. So therefore, we're talking all about the same thing, but we're using different terminologies, different analogies and parables to explain those things. Let's move on to the last concept that I wanted to discuss in this chapter. And that is, Melter Rebbe says that when we do mitzvahs and when we fulfill Hashem's will is energy flow to the world. That's what it means. What is Hashem's will? What does Hashem want? Hashem wants that the world should be created. Hashem wants that the world should be sustained. The methodology that Hashem uses, that's what Hashem wants. That's the ultimate. That's the goal. How is the world actually created? By Hashem. In other words, what is the mechanism that Hashem uses to create the world? So the Zohar explains to us, and the Kabbalists explain, that when Hashem creates the world, he uses pipelines of energy. And the pipelines of energy are the Hebrew letters of Hashem's name. And this is what we have here today, right now. In each of the 12 hours of the day, there rules one of the 12 combinations of the letters that form the four-letter name of Hashem, Yud-Heh and Vav-Heh. In each of the hours of the night, there rules a combination of letters that form Hashem's name, Aleph, Dalet, Nun, Yud. These are two names of Hashem that appear in the Chumash. So what we are explaining now is that if you want to know exactly what is the pipeline, we talk about the concept of a pipeline of energy. What is the pipeline? Pipeline is the Hebrew letters. Hashem created the world using Hebrew letters. In other words, when Hashem said, Yehi Or, which in Hebrew means let there be light, the letters of Yehi Or, the Yud and the Hey and the Yud of Yehi and the Aleph and the Vav and the Resh of Or, they actually became pipelines. They actually became cables, conduits, pathways, highways for energy to flow. What kind of energy? The answer is a Vav energy, a Yud energy, a Hey energy, a Yud energy, Aleph and a Vav and a Resh. Those energies themselves became the energy that created the world. And if we want to understand this today a little bit better, this is similar to us saying that, for example, water is H2O. It's two atoms of hydrogen plus one of oxygen. And if you put it together in that order, it becomes water. If you take off a little bit and you have CO2, CO2 is carbon dioxide, something completely different. If you have just this, just that, and you want to make something new in a laboratory, you can do it. Today, we have the ability to do it. Hashem is the ultimate chemist, the ultimate physicist, the ultimate creator. And Hashem set up 22 different types of energies. Those 22 energies is the 22 letters of the Hebrew alphabet. An Aleph energy, a Bet energy, just like we say a hydrogen and a carbon and the periodic table of the elements, all the base elements that are then mixed and formed and so on. And Hashem then, as a chemist, as a physicist, as a creator, mixed them up in such a way that they should create what he wanted to create. So he wanted to create light. He took Aleph Vav Resh, which is R, and that created light. He wanted to create a human being. He took Aleph Dalet Mem, and that was Adam, and so on and so forth. And he wanted to create animals. The animals have their Hebrew names. So according to the Zohar, the language of Hebrew is not just a language that is a language that expresses a concept. It's actually a language that creates the concept. Just like when we say the periodic table of elements in chemistry, and we say that something is, this this molecule is described as this bunch of letters with this bunch of numbers. It's not just a description, it's a creation. If you want to make this molecule, that's how you make it. You put together those elements in that order. So, which are both equally important, has to be that quantity, but those elements, those components, but also in that order. And that's the same that's true of Hashem creating the world. That's talking about on a specific level of creating specific objects. But on a general level, where does the general energy come from that creates and gives life to the world in general? Before we get into specifics, you have to, if you're going to take specifics and you're going to create something specifically, you have to take that from a pool. It has to come from somewhere, from a treasure house, from a storehouse, you want to take money and spend it on something, you got to take it out of a fund. It has to come from somewhere. How does the money get into the fund is the question. So the answer is that, again, as we've spoken many, many times, Hashem causes a certain energy pool, a fund, and from there, it comes down through what we call the four worlds. And, you know, each of those four worlds, 10 levels and sub-levels and further sub-levels, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But the general mechanism of creation, of the energy flow to happen, comes from the letters of Hashem's name. And that's why Hashem is called by that name. God doesn't have names. Something that is used to interact with somebody else. For yourself, you don't have a name. You don't need a name. Only time you need a name is when you are trying to differentiate yourself between you and somebody else in order to interact with somebody who knows you as this person, as this name. Hashem doesn't need a name. Hashem is the creator of everything. Hashem is above everything. He doesn't need a description. He's the creator. So therefore, the names of Hashem, the way they appear in the Chumash, according to Kabbalah, are actually descriptions of Hashem's creation of energy pools for different purposes. And what we're saying here now is that in order to, so what's our job? What are we humans here for? We are not disinterested bystanders. We are not uninvolved spectators. We are not simply fans of the sports game sitting in the stadium watching the game happen. No, we are the players on the field. We are the people who are actually on the floor of the factory, the technicians in the laboratory. We are the ones who are supposed to be making the energy flow work. We're not just spectators. We're not just bystanders. So what's our job? Our job is to facilitate, to enable, and to actually make happen the energy flow from the highest of levels, the source of the pool, the source of the fund, through the various levels until it comes down to the world. The world is depending on us. The entire universe is depending on us, the Jewish people, for us to do our job as the technicians. It's like, you know, the people in the factory, you say there's a supply chain. Why is a supply chain problem? How come you can't buy stuff of this kind or that kind? Because the workers didn't show up in the factory. Workers didn't show up in the factory, so there's no production, lack of product. We are the workers in the factory. We are the ones, the Jewish people. We are the ones who are supposed to be making the energy flow through the pipeline. Hashem sets it up. We are supposed to be making it happen. Now, each of the hours of the day, the world gets a different energy flow from another combination of letters of Hashem's name. So if you take the letters Yud-Ke, Vav-Ke, you could make a number of combinations from Yud-Ke. You could make Yud-He and then Vav-He. You could take the opposite way. You could take the second letter and put it first. A bunch of combinations. And as you combine the way I mentioned earlier, that it's not just the elements of the molecules that you're putting together, but it's also the order. what takes precedence? What's second? What's third? What's fourth? And in molecular science, it's the same thing. If you could have the same elements, if they're put together in a different order, it's a different molecule, and it has a different look, and it does a different job. But that's the way it is. And that's the way it is in the spiritual side, too. So if Hashem gives energy, Yud Kei Vav Kei, or Hashem gives energy, Hey Vav Yud Hey, or Hashem gives energy, Vav Yud Hey Hey, or whatever it is, then different energy. Every hour of the daytime, the energies change. Every hour of the nighttime, the energies change. If we were able, if we had the sensitivity, the spiritual sensitivity, to be able to see and to be able to interact and to be able to recognize, discern the energy that's flowing in that moment, we would not need a watch. We would be able to know with precision that not only the hour of the day, but the minute of the day, because every minute the energy changes slightly also, because it doesn't just boom change every hour. Just like a clock doesn't boom change every hour. There's an hour hand, there's a minute hand. There's an hour number, there's a minute number. So therefore, famous story, they say that the first Lubavitcher Rebbe, the Alter Rebbe, the author of the Tanya, was arrested by the Tsar in 1798. And he was arrested because he was slandered, unfortunately, by fellow Jews who said that he was supporting the Turkish government, the Ottoman Empire. At that time, Russia was at war. And what was he actually doing was he was sending money to the Chassidim who had made Aliyah previously to Israel. They had no money. He was raising money for them. But there was a number of Jews who decided to make him trouble for different reasons, unfortunately. And they slandered the Alter Rebbe to the government. And he was arrested. And he sat in jail for 54 days until he was released with great honor, because they finally figured out that he was in fact a great tzaddik and not at all a person who's revolutionary, but someone who supported the government. And there's many stories later on of how he supported the Russian government against the French, Napoleon, who came to fight. Oh, lots of different stories. Anyway, in the course of the interrogation, they put the Alter Rebbe in a cell with no window. And they wanted to discombobulate him. They wanted to make the Alter Rebbe confused. So they came in the middle of the day or middle of the night, whenever the time was, forget right now. And they told the Alter Rebbe, it's time for you to daven or do this and this. You know, the Alter Rebbe says, no, it's not. The time now is exactly this time. And he told him the exact minute of the time. And the minister who came was completely astonished. He said, how do you know the time? How can you tell the time? He says, oh, well, I don't tell the time, he says, by looking at a watch the way you need to tell a watch. I tell the time by being able to discern the spiritual energies that are happening in the moment. So this is what happens. The Rebbe is telling us now that since in each of the 12 hours of the day, the rules, one of the 12 combinations of the letters that form the four-letter name of Hashem, Yudke Vavke, and the combinations of letters that comprise the divine name, Aleph Daleth Yud, Yud, rule at night. Now, all one's intent to surrender should be, as we're saying, when you can, the Alter Rebbe says, if you study or do mitzvahs for a number of consecutive hours, you should reflect at least on hourly intervals about this purpose. What is the purpose that I'm doing the mitzvah? I'm doing the mitzvah in order to attach myself with the highest of levels and in order to attach myself with all of the neshamas of all the Jews. And this is something that should happen, that is necessary to do throughout the day, not just once a day, because in each hour of the day, there's a different flow of energy that you want to be affected. So this is the concepts that we're speaking about here in this chapter. Let's move on now a little bit to the next chapter, which is chapter 42. In the previous chapter, Dr. Rebbe explained that the emotions that we have when we're doing a mitzvah is a prerequisite. Fear of Hashem is a prerequisite to divine service. Every Jew is capable of attaining this level by contemplating that Hashem stands over us and Hashem is watching us. And if we are thinking to ourselves that Hashem is watching us, this will bring forth some measure of fear in your mind, a little bit of awe in your mind. The king is looking at you. The Rebbe previously said that if a regular person is looking at you, you're going to act differently. How much more so if the King of Kings is looking at you? This in turn will, if you think this way, will then enable the person to study Torah properly, as well as to perform all of the mitzvahs properly. The Alter Rebbe said that this level of fear is called the lower level of fear. It's a preparation to the proper performance of Torah and mitzvahs. If you want to have your mitzvahs be called a performance of a mitzvah, at the very least, you have to have this level of fear. What that means is the word mitzvah means a commandment. Commandment means somebody commanded you to do it. And the reason you're doing it is because you were commanded. So if you're not doing the mitzvah because you were commanded, but you're doing the mitzvah for some other reason, there could be some reason that you think is a good reason. You're doing the mitzvah because it makes you feel good, which is not a bad thing. You're still doing the mitzvah. But at the end of the day, you're not doing, quote, a mitzvah. You're doing something that's self-serving. And we're supposed to be doing mitzvahs, commandments. In order to do a commandment, you have to feel that you've been commanded. You have to feel that you are subject to some greater, higher power that tells you what to do, and therefore you do it. Make all the jokes about husbands, right? The husband's not supposed to do because you think it's good. You're supposed to do because your wife said to do. That's plain and simple. Not supposed to think so much. And the kids, you know, kids are not supposed to do what the parents said to do. Don't use your own intuition. You do because I said you should do it. Why should I do it, Mama? Why should I? Because I said so. Don't, you don't understand, but I don't understand. It doesn't matter. I said so. Famous jokes on both all levels. But anyway, that's how we're supposed to do a mitzvah. We're supposed to do a mitzvah because Hashem said so. And if we feel that Hashem is our boss, Hashem is our king, then when we do something, we're doing it at least with this level of lower level of fear. Again, it doesn't mean that your teeth are chattering and your knees are knocking together and you're completely afraid. This is just a lower level of fear. But at the very least, you feel that you are subject to a higher power. You need to make that entity, that higher power, happy by what you're doing. You can't just do whatever you want. You got to feel that you are a servant to a master. In light of what has already been said on such a lower fear, now we'll understand the Talmudic comment on the verse, and now Jews, now Israel, now Jews, Moshe says to the Jewish people, what does Hashem require of you? Moshe is telling the Jewish people, he's giving them a pep talk, a very long pep talk. And as part of this pep talk, Moshe says to the Jews, keeping the Torah, not so difficult. You know, there's many, many mitzvahs in the Torah. There's many, many things you have to do every day. And then there's other things you have to do on specific days. And you have to have an entire lifestyle. But it's not so difficult because it all boils down, Moshe says, to one beginning emotion. If you have your head straight and thinking with this one beginning emotion, Moshe says, everything else is going to follow. He says, what does Hashem require of you? Only that you fear Hashem. Moshe says to the Jews, if you fear Hashem, can't go wrong. Everything is going to follow. So the Gemara asks on this statement that says in the Chumash, in the Torah, the Gemara says, fearing God is not exactly a simple thing. We know this from ourselves. In other words, feeling, this feeling that we're describing, that you should feel subject to a higher power, you should feel subject to Hashem who's watching you, looking at you. Yeah, it's easy to say, but that's not so easy to actually live on that level all the time and do. So the Gemara says, well, Moshe is the one who's talking here. And for Moshe, it was the easy thing. Moshe very clearly felt Hashem's presence in his life, in his space. And he says, I see it so clearly. You guys must be able to do the same thing. If I can do it, you can do it. They tell a story that there was a rabbi, chassid. It's not just a story, but this is a true story, anecdote that there was a rabbi who came from Russia, one of the big chassidim, who was actually locked up in jail for many years for teaching Judaism in times of the communists. And he comes to his country and he finds out that the Rebbe wants that Jews should put on tefillin, that men should put on tefillin. And he's here in New York, doesn't speak English. So he goes over and he says, I want to help, I want to do. The Rebbe asked us to go and to ask people to put on tefillin, ask the guys to put on tefillin. So he goes over to the guy, he goes over and one of the streets of Manhattan, and he starts store by store, and he says, you Jew? The person says, understands that. You Jew, he understands. Yeah, I'm a Jew. So he says, you Jew, me Jew. You tefillin, he says, you Jew, me Jew. Me tefillin, you tefillin. And that's it. The guy got the message. He says, you're a Jew and I'm a Jew. I put on tefillin. You have to put on tefillin. You're supposed to put on tefillin. You're just like me. Whatever I do, this guy was a chassid, long white beard. The other guy was a completely secular person. He says, doesn't matter. I'm a Jew, you're a Jew. Me tefillin, you tefillin. So Moshe says the same thing to us. Moshe says, I don't care what you look like. I don't care where your level of mitzvah observance actually is. I mean, I do care, but it doesn't matter. It doesn't depend on what you're actually doing. It matters what you have inside of you. So Moshe says, I feel Hashem's presence. You must feel Hashem's presence too, because you're a Jew just like me. So this is what the Alter Rebbe is going to tell us now. Not exactly in these words. So at first glance, the Alter Rebbe asks, the answer that the Gemara answers is incomprehensible, because the verse says, what does Hashem require of you? In other words, Moshe clearly understood that he was not the same as every other Jew. Moshe is the one who spoke directly to Hashem. Moshe is the one who got the Torah on Mount Sinai and was able to speak to Hashem at will. How could he even imagine that a simple Jew would have the same ability to have Hashem's, this feeling of Hashem's presence all the time right in front of you? How could he even imagine that a simple other Jew would be able to be like that? So this answer of the Gemara is incomprehensible. The verse doesn't say, what does Hashem require of me? It says, what does Hashem require of you? And for the majority of Jews, fear of Hashem is certainly no simple accomplishment. What then is the point of answering that for Moshe it's a simple thing? The answer is that we are all connected, as we said previously in the previous chapter. Our neshamas are all connected to each other. And when one of our neshamas has the ability to attach and to do something, that has an effect on every other neshama and every other soul, because we come from the same pool of energy. And this is how much more so if the pool of energy that is the source of our neshamas, that means the great, great tzaddikim, we explained way back in the beginning of Tanya, great, great tzaddikim are the point of energy flow from where the energy from that of Hashem creating our neshamas flows through. And this is, today we have this concept of DNA. So it could have been that our great-great-grandfather had some concept, some ability, but if he had the DNA, we have the DNA because we're part of that same chain of DNA. There is physical DNA and the spiritual DNA. So the Gemara answers, the Alter Rebbe explains now that each and every soul comprises within it something of the quality of our teacher Moses, because this is called spiritual DNA. Moshe is a point through which the energy flows. Alter Rebbe now explains to us Really beautiful concept that they were actually considered to be seven shepherds, seven great tzaddikim. The seven great tzaddikim, each one developed another aspect, another type of connection to Hashem. And because we are all descending from those seven great tzaddikim, therefore, we have within ourselves the energy that they had to work hard to perfect. We have it by birth. We have it just because we're children. Who are those seven tzaddikim? So we talk about these seven tzaddikim on Sukkot specifically. And they all come to visit us in the Sukkot. This is Abraham, Yitzchak, Yaakov, Moshe, Aaron, Yosef, and David. These are seven shepherds. These are seven great, great tzaddikim who have worked in their lives. They lived a while ago, obviously, at accomplishing each one of them something which they then give over as an inheritance to the rest of the Jewish people.
Rabbi, can you please repeat
Abraham, Yitzhak, and Yaakov, right? That's easy to remember, our three patriarchs. Abraham, Yitzhak, Yaakov. Then comes Moshe, his brother Aaron. Moshe was the one who taught us the Torah and brought us out of Egypt, connected us initially, was our first teacher. Aaron, his brother, who was the Kohen Gadol, the first Kohen, the first one who actually brought down the fire from heaven onto the Mizbeach, onto the altar, and who was the one who extreme love for the every single Jew and so on. Then comes Yosef, who is... the one who initially, even before, was the one who gave all food to the entire Jewish nation. When there was no food in Israel, the Jews came down to Egypt. And then comes King David, who was our first king, right? So it's Abraham, Yitzhak, Yaakov, Moshe, Aaron, Yosef, and David. Those seven shepherds are the ones who come to visit us. They're called the Ushpizin. Ushpizin is an Aramaic word that means guests. They come to visit us in our sukkah. But at any rate, we talk about Moshe specifically. So Moshe is one of the seven shepherds, and Moshe is the one who teaches us faith in Hashem. So each one of these great tzaddikim bequeath us, they give us by inheritance, certain quality that's natural and inborn. It becomes DNA, it becomes something that's in our makeup. Yes, you have to work on it in order to bring it out, in order to express it. But once you have it inside of you, then you can work with it. If you don't have it inside of you, you can't bring it out. So, you know, if you have a talent for something, you could work on the talent. But if you don't have the talent, forget about it. So that's, okay. And what is our teacher Moshe? Comprises aspects of all of them. And he is called the faithful shepherd. This means that he draws down the quality of da'as to the community of Israel, that they may know and be cognizant of Hashem, so that for them, godliness should be self-evident and experienced by every Jew. Moshe gives us faith in Hashem that is so powerful and so self-evident that it is no longer simply faith. Now it's knowledge. So it's a difference between saying, I believe or I know. Moshe gives us, everybody has the ability to say, I believe. That you have to know. That for that you have to know. That's a different level of attachment, a different level of certainty. Moshe is the one who teaches us how to move from I believe to I actually see it in front of my eyes. Totally different. I feel it, I see it, I'm connected. In Hebrew, the word das means knowledge, but in the language of the Kabbalist, the word das means to connect. And this is also used in biblical Hebrew, das means to connect also. According to the degree of nurture from the root of soul of Moshe, according to how connected we are to Moshe's soul, meaning how much of Moshe's energy do we actually feel And this depends on a number of things. It depends, first of all, on how Hashem gave us our initial soul, and also depends how much we worked on our soul. So Hashem can give somebody a little more energy, a little more clarity in their neshama, just like Hashem can give somebody a little more ability in their singing voice or in their organizational ability or in their some other, you know, natural talent. And then you can have somebody else who doesn't have as much natural talent, a little, but works on that little bit so that they can even surpass the one who has more natural talent. Or you could have the best combination is someone who has a lot of natural talent and then works on it very, very much and then becomes an amazing genius in that field, whatever. You know, huge, an amazing expert. So according to Alter Rebbe says, to the degree of our nurture from the root of the soul of our teacher Moshe, which is rooted in Das Elyon. Das Elyon is the highest level of Das of the highest world, the Das of the world of Atzilus, which those levels are united, which we're not going to get into right now, exactly the difference between Atzilus and the other three worlds, but there is a difference. The energy in the highest of the four worlds is a much more clear and powerful energy attachment to Hashem than the energy in the next three stages, next three worlds. At any rate, depending on how a person connects themselves to Moshe, you are able to actually reach that level. And every single Jew is connected to Moshe just because we're Jewish. In addition to this, in every generation, there are sparks from Moshe. And those sparks from Moshe become the tzaddik of the generation. The tzaddik, the Rebbe, the tzaddik of that generation is the Moshe of that generation. And if you attach yourself to that tzaddik, then you have the ability. We came to the Rebbe, used to come, Rebbe Fabregan, or we would just talk about the Rebbe. All of a sudden, things that you would never imagine you'd be able to accomplish, all of a sudden you can do. How does this work? If you're standing in the presence of a great, great tzaddik, all of a sudden, this is not really me, I never thought about this. All of you feel like you're on a totally different level. And then you leave the Rebbe's presence and you go back to be the shlub that you were before. That's a separate issue. Fine. But when you're in the Rebbe's presence, oh boy, do you feel so special and so energized and this and that. Why is that? Why? And the answer is because the tzaddik of the generation wakes up inside of yourself a certain inborn spiritual DNA that is then able to actually affect the way you talk and think and feel. If you're lucky, you're able to walk around with that a little bit longer, and then you eventually get worn down. You got to go back to the tzaddik and get re-energized, or your batteries get depleted, and you got to go back and so on. But that's the way it is. So Moshe was the original teacher of Torah, the original and first teacher of connectedness to Hashem. And therefore, the tzaddik of each generation is called the Moshe of that generation. The job of the tzaddik is to impart knowledge to the people. So the people, the ordinary Jews, should be able to know the greatness of Hashem and serve him with heart and soul. Because the service of the heart, serving Hashem with emotion, all depends on Das. All depends on how much you have clarity. You can't have emotion for something unless you feel clearly that it's important to you. If you're confused, if you're mixed up, on a simple level, you know, you're going on a date. Do I like this person? Do I not like this person? You have a friend. I'm not so sure. Are we friends? Are we not? But if you clearly see, oh, this chemistry, oh, this attachment, so, you know, you can fall in love. You can have the, you know, deeper type of friendship, relationship, whatever, whichever specifically we're talking about. The same, of course, is true when we're talking about our relationship with our Creator, with Hashem. If we're all mixed up, we're all confused, we don't clearly see the, quote, the miracle in our life. We don't clearly see how Hashem is watching over us and Hashem is taking care of us. And we don't see, we don't have those moments of clarity that, wow, God really loves me. Well, then when it comes to do a mitzvah, you're a little mixed up. Why am I doing the mitzvah? I don't feel it. But if you clearly see the connection that you have with Hashem, then when you do a mitzvah, your performance of mitzvah is a totally different performance. So this is what we say when Mashiach comes, we're going to have the ultimate clarity. And at that point, we're no longer going to need anybody to explain anything to us. We are going to have the ultimate connectedness to Hashem. Said concerning the future Messianic era, there will be no more need for anybody to teach anybody anymore, because each of us will already have clarity, already have complete awareness of Hashem's presence in our, not only our life in general, but in every single individual thing that we do.